Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thanks again for joining me for another in-depth and enlightening conversation regarding your health and well-being, because this show is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible. And these days, you really need to have an open mind. You need to have critical thinking, and you need to really explore options and understanding of what really is affecting our health and how to make sure not only regaining our health, but the real goal is sustaining our health. So thanks for joining me. As always, it's great having you as part of this community. And if you'd like to get the archive shows, by the way, please go to my Facebook page, which is Women Must Know, like me there. Or you can go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and opt in there. And then all of the archive shows will be sent directly to your inbox. I have a second show on Progressive Radio Network, by the way, called The Love Code. And that's every Saturday at 11 a.m. So you can get that show as well when you opt in or like me. That is a spiritual show. We have great wisdom and inspiration and healing and transformation. So I hope you'll be joining me on both of those podcasts every week. Now, jumping into an important conversation, we're going to be talking about Lyme disease. Lyme disease is such an epidemic and growing. And not only is it an epidemic, it's really hard to diagnose Lyme disease. It has many ways that it will manifest as symptoms in the body. It can be really tricky, and it's even trickier to treat it and to successfully heal it. So we're going to have a conversation with Veer McCoy, and it's all about liberating yourself from Lyme. So let me just share a little bit about Veer. After contacting Lyme disease in the summer of 2001 in Marin County, California, Veer embarked on a healing journey that culminated in a profound and complete healing for both. After standard antibiotic medical protocols, Veer began to have intuitive or sensory impressions about the nature of the disease, the immune system, and why they were chronically ill. They developed their own, and I just say they as his co-author, they developed their own protocol based on intuitive sensory perception in a way a medical intuitive might. By backing up the intuitive impressions with scientific evidence, a unique protocol was developed combining Western and alternative medicine. In addition, and most importantly, a conscious shift in the way they related to the disease emerged. This brought them a full recovery in 2010 after a 10-year journey. Liberating Lyme is a product of that journey by bridging the spiritual and the scientific. And it's such a pleasure to have Veer McCoy with us and giving us hope, giving us the ability to have a pathway, to have a roadmap to recovery from Lyme disease. So, Veer, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So let's start with your journey. Can you give us a little more of the experience that you had when you first were diagnosed or first were bitten? I mean, did you have the telltale signs? Just let's learn a little bit about your journey with Lyme.
Yeah, so it was the summer of 2001, gosh, almost 20 years ago, in Marin County, like you said in the introduction there, and that's in California now. For those of your listeners who don't know, it's north of the San Francisco Bay Area. It's kind of a rural area, and I work as a field biologist, and that is it's a kind of scientist that goes out and does like botanical surveys or bird surveys. I'm the guy that goes out and IDs the plants and animals and, you know, and does wetland restoration and things like that. So I was working as a field biologist in Marin, and I came home and I was taking a shower and I found a tick buried in my armpit. And it seemed like the tick had been there for a long time. Unfortunately, I don't think I'd taken a shower for a couple of days, so it might have been there for a little while. So I pulled it out, and I, you know, at that time, I'd vaguely heard of Lyme disease as something being more on the East Coast, where it's quite prevalent there. And I just thought, oh, I'll keep an eye on it. And I kind of forgot about it. And then 3 weeks later, about 2.5 to 3 weeks later, I got a big bullseye rash in a circle around my belly button on my stomach. And we now know that people that get bit by a tick, if it's Lyme disease, you may not even get a rash. I think statistically it's about 50% of people get some kind of rash, and it could be a diffuse rash, and it could be somewhere else on your body, not necessarily where the tick bit you. And then a lot of people don't even get the rash. So I had this rash, and I'm showing people, you know, I was like asking people, hey, what's this? Do you know what this is? And people are like, I don't know. And I thought it was poison oak or something, or which is, you know, but it didn't itch, and maybe it's ringworm, and I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a big issue, so I let it go. Now, we know that if someone would have known what that was, I could have nipped it in the bud and saved myself probably 10 years of suffering, but I got to be the poster child instead. So I had this rash. It went away. And then maybe a few weeks after the rash went away, I started to get some arthritic symptoms. And at that time, I think I was about 30. I'm 53 now, so I was 30, 33. So I was pretty young, pretty strong, pretty healthy. I'd never had arthritis before. And I started to get this itchiness in my hips and in my knees, and then it spread into my feet. And then I didn't know what was going on. Like, how could I be getting arthritis? I went to a doctor, and they said, oh, it looks like it's rheumatoid arthritis. I was like, geez, I'm so young. And then maybe another few weeks after that, I was playing guitar. I'm a musician as well. And I was playing guitar with some friends, and my arm wouldn't move the way I wanted it to. So it was like, move hand now. And there'd be a delay in my hand moving. Huh. And the person that I was with said, dude, something is really wrong with you. And I pretty much burst into tears and was like, yeah, my God, I don't know what's going on. I've just been so, you know, this is weird. So I went to a friend of mine who happened to be a doctor, and I told him what I was feeling, and he didn't know what it was. And we literally went from his we went to his little medical encyclopedia and started with A, Alzheimer's. No, although, you know, it's got some similarities. B, botulism. C, cancer. No. D, diaper rash. No. E, you know, we went through the whole thing until I got to L, Lyme. And I read about Lyme, and I went, oh my God. I put it all together with the bullseye rash, the symptoms I was experiencing, and I knew it was Lyme disease. And I went straight to another doctor and demand, you know, I went in there. This was the Point Reyes Clinic in Marin County. I went in there and I said, you got to test me for Lyme. I think I have Lyme disease. And they said, well, Lyme doesn't exist in Marin County. There's no such thing here. And I demanded that they test me. And they tested me, and it came back positive for Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the spirochete that is Lyme disease or causes Lyme. And so they gave me a course of antibiotics called doxycycline, and I took that for a month, and all my symptoms cleared up. Now, granted, timelines are important. I took doxycycline probably 2.5 to 3 months after I'd been bitten by a tick, and that's too late usually. And I'll tell your listeners why. But so I took the doxycycline and all the symptoms went away. including the arthritis. And I was like, okay, I think I'm good to go. And then maybe 2 or 3 months later, it came raging back. I mean, it was like delirious fevers. All the arthritis came back, more mental confusion. I started getting fevers. I started getting weird neurological tics. I got Bell's palsy, which is your face starts to sag because line gets into the nerves in your brain and in your head. So basically, at this point, the line had crossed the blood-brain barrier. And so I ended up in the hospital this time, and I had to do 40 days of intravenous antibiotics. And that seemed to knock it out, or knock it back, really. I got out of the hospital, and then maybe 6 months later, it came raging back again with a vengeance. And that time, it almost killed me. And I went to the hospital a second time. And we can pause there if you have any questions.
No, I mean, let's continue with that journey you've been on, and then we can explore it in more depth.
Yeah. So the third time I went to the hospital, I was basically catatonic. I was pretty much bedridden. And as any Lyme sufferer will tell you, sort of chronic Lyme sufferer. But I was just, I couldn't hardly move. And like I said before, I'm a really pretty strong guy. I'm a surfer and everything. And I've been, I'm super healthy. And I just was bedridden for days. And finally, my girlfriend at the time took me to the hospital. And they did all these tests. And I said, I think it's Lyme disease. I mean, it's the same symptoms. It's coming back. And it turned out that it was one of the co-infections. So we now know that when a tick bites you, it can dump in a bunch of bad little guys, including Borrelia. And then there's other ones where they call them the co-infections, Babesia, Ehrlichia, and Bartonella, to name a few. There's more that they've discovered now. So basically, you get this whole smorgasbord of bacteria. So they tested me, and it turned out it was Ehrlichia from the same – I hadn't been bit by a tick since that same tick. So I knew it was from the same tick. And once again, they put me on antibiotics, and I did more. At this point, I'm probably a couple of years into Lyme disease, and had taken just truckloads of different kinds of antibiotics. And typically what doctors do is they rotate antibiotics, which is a good thing, but they'll give you sometimes two or three different ones. So I had taken just truckloads of antibiotics at this time. But something amazing happened when I was in the hospital that time was I was laying in bed with an IV hooked up to my arm in the hospital, pretty delirious. And I just started thinking, like, well, what is going on? What is this thing, well, you know, that has this whole host of critters, and why does it keep coming back? And I just, you know, it was like I just at my wit's end. And Lyme gets in your brain, and it jumbles your brain in a way that feels like it could be misdiagnosed as being dyslexic, being schizophrenic, being bipolar. I mean, it has a very real psychological component to it that's very scary. And I started having panic attacks at this point. And it has all these crazy symptoms, neurological symptoms, arthritic symptoms. And it just, you know, I was fortunate in the way that I knew what it was. Whereas people who don't get diagnosed, maybe misdiagnosed with all these other situations, including things like multiple sclerosis, and it's actually Lyme disease, undiagnosed Lyme disease. And I cataloged that in my book, all these symptoms that I ended up going through. So back in the hospital, I'm laying in bed, and because my brain was so jumbled, it was like, I remember this feeling of all I could do was just breathe. All I can do is breathe, and all I can do is love. Those are the things that I knew I could still somehow do. And when you're forced, like it's like when your brain doesn't work anymore, you have nowhere else to go but that place. And I had taken some meditation classes, so I had a few tools to try to calm myself down. So I just focused on my breathing, and I started to feel into my brain, like on the inside, as if I was using my sensory perception, as I like to say. And the way that like a mother holds a baby, and any moms out there will know this, when you hold a baby and a baby makes a little sound like, mom knows what that baby is needing. Maybe baby needs food or baby needs to go to the bathroom. So I started to hold my brain like it was a little baby, like something I love. And I'm so in the hospital, imagining I'm holding my brain, saying, I love you, brain. I love you. I love you. What's the matter? What's the matter? What do you need? So using my sensory perception, it's like, what does the pain look like? What does the pain taste like? What does it smell like? What does it remind you of? This is the realm of intuition, or what people would say is a medical intuitive. I didn't know it back then, but that's what I was starting to tap into. So I'm in this sort of loving presence and just holding my brain like a baby. And I had this beautiful image of an oak tree in the forest. And up the side of the oak tree were mushrooms. Not the kind that grow on the ground, but the shelf mushrooms or polypore mushrooms that grow up the side of the tree. And it was like spiraling up to the sky like a Dr. Seuss, you know, cartoon or something. And I'm laying there. And it was like, oh, I need these. What are these? I need these. And from my work as a field biologist, I recognized two of the three mushrooms that I saw. And one of them was reishi mushrooms. And the second one was called turkey tail mushrooms. And the third one I had to look up after I got out of the hospital, but I identified it as shaga mushrooms. And at the time, mushrooms have become quite popular, but at the time I didn't know much about them. So I did some research and I looked them up, and it turns out that, wow, reishi's been used for thousands of years in Chinese medicine to boost the immune system. It sort of smartens your immune system. Turkey tail has been used as an anti-cancer drug in the U.S. and the United States. And shaga is another amazing immune-boosting medicine. So it became really clear to me that that my body was needing these kinds of things. So I thought about this process after I got out of the hospital, that maybe, you know, I've heard of stories about shaman in the rainforest talk to the plants, or the plants talk to them or tell them what the medicine does or something like that, you know. And I'd heard about this, and I started to – my science brain needs evidence, right? So I started looking up things and doing research. And it's like, well, maybe we don't have to be a shaman in the rainforest. And if you think about it, if we've evolved and adapted on this planet for thousands of years with all these plants and animals – right here, maybe all those medicines are there. Maybe when a dog craves grass or certain animals seek out certain herbs when they're sick, they know what they're doing, that there's a deeper wisdom there. So this led me out of this place of like, well, this is kind of a non-mental kind of, science I call it a spiritual science. So I started to look into this, but the clincher is that a few months out of the hospital, I was reading National Geographic, and I was reading about Otzi the Iceman. And if some of your readers recall, Otzi the Iceman was this mummified body that some hikers in the Swiss Alps found thawed out. So they were hiking up in the mountains, and in a particularly warm summer, they found this body that was laying in the snow. And they took it to scientists, and it turns out this body had been frozen for 5,300 years. And it just so happened that these hikers stumbled upon it. Otzi the Iceman. This is in the 1980s. And they did all these studies on Otzi, and they looked to see what he was he was eating and what kind of clothes he was wearing. Like, he had leather sandals, and they also looked at what kind of diseases Otzi had. It turns out that Otzi had Borrelia. He had Lyme disease. But what was more important to me was that Otzi had a little leather pouch around a belt on his waist. And guess what was in that little leather pouch? The same kinds of mushrooms that I had had the vision of in the hospital. He had a birch polypore, the same kind of shelf mushrooms, and another mushroom, the kind that grew up the side of the trees. And I dropped the National Geographic in the store and went, oh, my God, he was treating his Lyme disease. Either he went to a shaman or he figured it out, I don't know. But it gave me that validation that perhaps what I was intuiting was right on. And so I started to work that muscle. I started to work that intuitive muscle. And all this is in the book. And I started doing these loving meditations into my body, sort of like a motherly loving meditation, and started to ask and inquire into the pain that I was feeling, and started to ask what my body needed. And I started to get images, and I started to get sensations and tastes and memories and things, everything from like emotional things to antibiotics to like crazy, you know, whatever. You have to be extremely open. So I started to develop this tool of what we call a medical intuitive, except I was doing it with myself. And I just started to write down everything that I was feeling, sensing, tasting, smelling, like what was my body needing to heal. And I started to listen to that through my sensory perception. And I wrote down a protocol based upon that. And we can talk about that. But I basically came out of Lyme disease from a big part of this protocol that I intuited by doing this inquiry. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing journey. It's so much suffering to have endured to get to the place that you actually transformed your life. You know, I'm sure looking back, you can see the gift, but there's a lot that needed to occur before you could surrender to the place where you almost died to tap into this greater wisdom and greater purpose. I just want to say it's so interesting you talk about, you know, getting that vision of what you needed for your own healing, because when we talk about these medicines in the, you know, in the Amazon or wherever that these wisdom keepers have been able to utilize, and personally having gone to the Amazon and having taken the medicine, the plant medicine ayahuasca, and some of the other plant medicines from the Amazon, the question always is asked, how did these people ever figure out how to combine two plants that had this amazing healing ability to access other realms when they weren't even planted, they don't even grow near each other, right? And then how to prepare them, because it's not just finding them, you have to know how to prepare them. And what you're sharing there is the way that it has been told that these plants were discovered. It was through the plants talking, or through that consciousness where we're all connected, of accessing the information to guide people to what to do.
Yeah, exactly. This intuitive process, this non-mental process, this interconnected process. And what I discovered was that you don't have to be a shaman in the rainforest. Even in the West, where we're so heady, it's possible. You just got to get your thinking mind out of the way, which is not so easy to do, you know, in our Western society.
Well, look what it took you to do that. You really had to go to the depths of your life, you know, to get to the place where you, in effect, surrendered your mind your brain, your intellect,
to access.
A couple of questions I want to ask you. What are the latest statistics about Lyme in the United States? I know it's also in other countries. I remember writing about Lyme many years ago, and it was said, well, it doesn't exist in Canada, but I would talk to people in Canada who had Lyme disease. So it, you know, it's like it wasn't supposed to be on the West Coast. I think now it's totally accepted. It's all throughout the United States and other countries. Do you have any latest statistics?
Yes. So in the last 20 years since I had Lyme, Lyme has exploded on the West Coast and in other countries. And I just saw that the Center for Disease Control estimates that approximately 400,000 people get diagnosed. Now, that's just diagnosed with Lyme alone in the U.S. So that implies that it's probably much higher, 400,000 people. And that's a lot of people. And what happens is, just so listeners get a little idea of why Lyme is so why it sticks around so much, is that we have to understand the Lyme life cycle. So Lyme is like a parasite, and that is, once the adult form gets in you, the little spirochete, it can lay eggs. Or really what it does is it turns into a cyst, like a hardened little ball. And this egg form or cyst form can hide out in your nervous system. So what happens is that you may kill all the adults off with antibiotics or herbs or whatever you're doing, but the little cysts hatch when the coast is clear. And they've done studies that have shown these cysts can lay dormant for up to a year. And so what happens is that when the cysts hatch, they mutate. So you now have a new generation of Lyme disease that's different from what you had before, and you may need to treat it differently. You might have to use different herbs or different antibiotics. But the problem is that it keeps up with this cycle, and then Lyme disease also gets into your immune cells themselves. So it's called the L form, and both the L form and the cysts are called persister cells. So Lyme, for years, people didn't believe that it was possible, but there's plenty of research and science out there now that shows that there's these persister cells that can exist for a long time. And with my intuitive view muscle that I built up, I was actually able to see this form and also see how to treat it as well. But that's why Lyme is so tenacious, as it goes through these hatching and egg cycles, just like a parasite. So someone feels okay for a few months, and then their Lyme's hatch, and then they feel like crap for a couple of months, and they're back to being bedridden, and then they get better, and then they feel like crap, and they feel better, and it just goes on and on and on, and it becomes this chronic sort of situation. And I saw that the CDC said that between 5% and 30% of people that get Lyme disease will develop this, or can develop this chronic sort of Lyme disease.
The tricky thing about Lyme disease is that it may not show up with a symptom when you've been bitten by a tick, or actually there are other vectors now too. It's not just ticks that can carry that infection, those bacteria, I understand. So biting insects, but it also can be transferred through fluids, right? So it can be
correct
through seminal fluids. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that we can contract and pass it on now. So you don't even have to be bitten. You just have to, you know, be exposed or have a partner, which is so scary because it, you know, I think you said in some of your notes, it's the great imitator. You can have so many issues, so many symptoms. And if you don't know you've been bitten, if you don't get that bullseye rash, which I don't know what percentage of the time there is a bullseye rash, but often there isn't. So, you know, you just don't know what's going on. All of a sudden, like you were sharing, your health starts declining in some serious ways.
Yeah, it's very sneaky. It's like the sneakiest little thing that you'll ever have to deal with. And it hides and it mutates, and it's as if it has a crude intelligence. And many people with Lyme disease will say that this is the case, that there's sort of an alien feel to it, you know, like a kind of a little evil entity or something that has a mind of its own. And it's very sneaky in that way. And interestingly enough, scientifically, you know, a lot of things start off as anecdotal evidence. Like for me to say that Lyme seems like it has a consciousness sounds like it could be anecdotal evidence. But sometimes science catches up to that anecdotal evidence. And we now know that there's a really well-known scientist, Yaroslav Fledger, who was infected with a parasite that infects cats usually, but he got it. What's it called? I can't remember. But he noticed his thoughts changing, and he noticed his behavior changing. And he wrote a very important scientific article on parasitic consciousness that he said that the parasite has an agenda of survival, that it will manipulate you in order to survive. So thoughts that you're having might not actually be your thoughts, or things and actions that you're doing might not actually be something that you're wanting to do. It's something the parasite wants to do. So it's a very real sort of parasitic consciousness that you have to deal with.
You know, I know that parasite you're talking about, which I can't remember, comes from cats, and it causes people to have risky behaviors, which makes them more prone to die, because then it starts the cycle if you're in the ground again. Yeah, and it has many hosts, and, you know, cat mice do risky things, so they're caught by cats, and it's just, you know, it's pretty terrifying. It's like a body snatcher taking you over.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the you made one other comment, and then I think it's really important for us to go into the proper way to test and the protocols that you discovered and some of the other resources that you offer. But the Borrelia has been around for a really long time. I think it was found inherent in certain forests in Germany, in that area. It was an infection, but it was manageable. But this, because it's a combination of different bacteria and a particular type of bacteria that move more effectively through muscle than blood than fluids, it can get into the muscles and into the solid structures of the body. But it has to be said that this is the theory which I personally believe, that it is a bioweapon that escaped from the lab on that island off of Connecticut, off of Lyme, Connecticut. And this only showed up, you know, I don't know, maybe it's 30 or more years now, but it didn't exist before. That's the theory. I think there's some truth to it.
Yeah, I didn't know about that theory until later, but I will say that when I started working with this intuitive muscle and being able to see things, there was a number of times where I saw the Lyme itself. And when I saw the Lyme, I remember this very clearly, it had this curious mechanical quality to it, as if it was like one of those video game spiders or something, like a mechanical spider. And I remember thinking, wow, this thing is really like mutated, and it's really weird. So when I heard about that there's a number of books that talk about that they may have taken the existing spirochete or Borrelia and manipulated it, I think during World War II or the 50s or 60s, I'm not sure, and like you said, may have manipulated this for a biological weapon, and then it got out. I don't know for sure about that, but what I can say is that Lyme disease had a very mechanical quality to it, and that sort of fits in with the theory that it was manipulated.
Yeah. Well, now that the cat's out of the bag, so to speak, What is it that you are recommending for people who have a diagnosis? And let's start even before that. If you, after maybe just this conversation, if you suspect that you have these weird symptoms that just appeared, what's the test that now is considered the best test? Because that was always a problem in the beginning. There were a lot of false readings. You got a negative when there was actually should have been a positive result.
Yeah. Testing is obviously notoriously difficult, and we're seeing issues with COVID as well. The Lyme test that I tested positive, and I tested positive for the co-infections as well. So I was lucky in that way that I knew what it was. But for someone who's been suffering with a lot of oddball symptoms, I recommend getting tested not once, not twice, but three times, and getting different tests to double check. So now there's the PCR test, there's the ELISA test, and there's the Western blot test, which is probably the most crude of the three. But I recommend getting as many tests as you can, and it's very helpful to know what you actually have. There's a number of different testing facilities, and you know now they're looking at. I think there's even a new test that they've developed that looks at the genetic material. Now, I've been out of the testing loop for a long time. I think the last time I ever got tested was maybe 15 years ago. So I encourage your listeners to just look up and see what is the most cutting edge best test for Lyme disease and take that test three times, because you really ultimately have to go by symptoms. But it is so helpful to know if your symptoms are indeed Lyme, because you can have a range of bizarro symptoms. I mean, anyone with multiple sclerosis or MS, get tested for Lyme three, four times. Anyone with any kind of neuralgia, weird moving rheumatoid type arthritis, get tested for Lyme. Anyone with, even mental symptoms, just get tested for Lyme. Make sure that it's not Lyme. It's incredibly sneaky in that way.
Yeah, great advice. Even dementia or cognitive impairment, check it out, because that could have a Lyme component to it. So many things. So let's go to the next step. So if someone has been tested positive, what's the next thing they need to be doing, or what's the protocol they need to be incorporating into their life?
You have to be extremely diligent. Lyme is like a physical and spiritual roto-rooter. In a way, you have to see Lyme as a teacher. And I say this because that was my experience, was Lyme disease sort of showed me where I needed to get my immune system stronger, showed me where I needed to clean up my thoughts, showed me where I needed to clean up my actions. You know, it's like all those things that might be dampening your immune system, you have to get on top of. Everything from self-love. I mean, what's it saying to yourself? If you don't love yourself, what's that saying to your immune system? That's like saying to your little immune army, well, I don't care. Like, you don't protect me. I don't care if I die anyway, right? Those subtle things make an impact on your immune system. Everything from molds to increased electromagnetic frequencies to the foods you're eating, to the thoughts you're having, the feelings you're feeling, the unexpressed feelings, the forgiveness that needs to happen. And I go through this in my book of kind of like a checklist of your immune system of what might be dampening your immunity, because ultimately it's your immunity that's going to be your best ally. I believe that my immune system got a hold on it. It wasn't necessarily a magic pill or a magic bullet, but the immune system is extremely important in getting to 100%. And, of course, we're seeing this with COVID as well. It's like it's really asking us to get our immunity stronger. Just like I was saying, it's like it almost becomes a teacher. So in my book, Liberating Yourself from Lyme, I list different kinds of foods that came to me that I found to be helpful. I list exercises that you can do. I list tons of different kinds of antibiotics and homeopathics and herbs and all sorts of things that, that one person can do to really get back on top of Lyme disease, including ways to access your own intuition, because one person's medicine might be different from another person.
You know, when you're talking, it just brings to my mind the teacher that any chronic illness is, if you choose to see it that way. Because it, you know, people who have chronic illnesses like Lyme can't afford to really abuse themselves, can't afford to take on behaviors or foods that are compromising their body's ability to function. It's like you're forced to make the choices that are going to optimize the healing power within you, right? Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually.
Yes. Yes. It's like the Lyme forces you. It's like you have to. You have to get on top of all of it, or you're going to stay in this place of, you know, endless chaos. And so in that way, Lyme becomes a teacher and you have to take up the challenge, you know, and it feels incredibly empowering actually to get on top of where is it that I'm, you know, leaking my energy? Where is it I need to change my diet? Where is it that I could get stronger in my immunity? And it's not easy to do, you know, and it's not about blame or anything like that, because sometimes we're just really, really sick. And we can't, you know, there's nothing that we can do, and we're just completely reliant on doctors, and that's okay. But this intuitive tool is really important, because you can start that very simply, and it's a powerful tool to help people find what it is that their body's needing, you know, because it could be as simple as like, wow, you know what? I need to forgive my dad. I'm still so angry at him, and this is dampening my immune system. So by inquiring into our own bodies, the clues are there. It's like you become a Sherlock Holmes. You just got to look on the inside. Your body will tell you what it needs.
One thing I've learned from people who've had Lyme is that when they are under stress or anything, encountering any stressor, they will create an environment that activates the Lyme. So it just becomes imperative to learn or to make the choices in one's life to stay in peace and love. So you can maintain a strong immune system against, because that whatever is suspended with it, that cyst stage, which can hide, will be activated under situations that are favorable to it, which comes from the stress of from whatever source that is weakening the immune system.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this kind of brings me into the, you mentioned love, and I'm going to bring your listeners into really the thing, the greatest medicine that I can offer, the greatest tool that I can give any of your listeners is love. So I dealt with Lyme for almost 9 years. So I started to build this intuitive repertoire of the foods that I needed to be eating. And we can get into all that if you'd like, but you know, all the medicines and things. And I still wasn't completely coming out of Lyme. And one of the issues is that Lyme creates a tremendous amount of fear. You get panic attacks. You get night sweats. You start to feel like you're losing your mind. And now they're saying people with COVID are getting similar symptoms, a sort of long COVID where you can start to get into fearful spaces and delusional spaces. So me being the adventurer, I started to go out into the desert, and I started doing these trips where I just needed to be by myself to sort of hear and listen and see what was going on. And so I decided, I think it was 2009 or so. This is like 8 or 9 years into my being ill. I went out to the desert by myself, and I decided I'm going to get to the bottom of this thing once and for all. Like, what is this? And so I'm out in the desert by myself in my little tent one night, and it was probably day 6 or 7, and I had a full-on panic attack. I'm just panicking out in the middle of the night, and it's like, oh, my God, I'm going to die out here. You know, it's just absolute terror. And I started thinking about Lyme. It's like, how can something so tiny, this little bacteria, be so I'm so afraid of it. I'm so terrified of this entity or whatever this thing is that's chewing up my body, that's taking me over, that's, you know, I'm so angry at it. And it's why am I just so terrified of this thing? And I'm laying in my tent there in this panic attack. And I started thinking about the bacteria. And then I just had this moment of, wow, I'm terrified of it. What if I love Lyme? What if I love the disease? And it shocked me when I had that thought, but it was like a series of bells going off, like ding, 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 ding. Yes. Oh my God. didn't Martin Luther King say that? You know, you can only meet hate with love. Didn't Jesus say that? Bless the enemy. Didn't Gandhi say that? Didn't every saint and sage say that? And it was like, oh my God, I never thought of it like, well, I guess this bacteria is my enemy, you know? What if I love the Lyme disease? So I'm laying in my tent, and I imagine what the Lyme looked like, and to me it was like a little baby alien spider, and I just start holding it. I start holding it like a little baby. I'd done all this meditation with holding parts of my body, but I'd never actually done the Lyme disease. So I'm holding it in my tent, and I started thinking about it, and I started feeling into the quality of the Lyme. It's like, God, this thing is like at the bottom of the karmic totem pole, you know, but it's still alive. It's still part of the universe, you know. It's still a life form, even though it's at the bottom. I mean, maybe COVID's even a little lower than Lyme. I don't know, but they're at the bottom of life, but yet they're still alive. There's some kind of life to it. And I thought about it, and I thought to myself, like, what if I was the Lyme disease? What if I was the Lyme itself? Like, how terrible of an existence would that be? If, like, you're just trying to survive, you're just wanting to stay alive. Like, what a horrible existence. And in that moment, I started to have a sense of compassion for the Lyme disease, of like, wow, what a crummy existence you have. I am so sorry that this is your existence. And we know to climb up that karmic totem pole, what do we need? We need love. And I realized in that moment that the Lyme was losing its power over me. It's like, you know what? You can maybe take my body, but you can't kill me. I came up against this fear of death, and I realized, like, my spirit will continue on. You can't kill that part of me, never, ever. And so in that moment, by loving the Lyme, it started to lose its power over me. The whole entity part of it, the sort of like the consciousness of it, dissolved. And it's like love the monster, right? And we've all heard these stories, but actually applying it out there in the desert. And this was the biggest medicine I had. And then the second biggest medicine I realized was when I was out there, it's like just like in martial arts, when you look at your enemy and you bow to them and you look them in the eye, and it's like saying, I see you. I see you as part of the universe. You know, I love you. Bless you. Now I'm going to cut your head off. Now get the hell out of my body right now. I am going to roast you back to kingdom come. So it became top medicines became love and boundaries, or love and fire, of like, and my motto after that became thank it, bless it, burn it. thank it, bless it, burn it. And after I came out of the desert, I was done with Lyme disease within a few months. I mean, it was just done. And I've been symptom free and haven't had any issues for over 10 years now.
Wow. So profound a journey you've been on. So profound.
Yeah.
So profound.
So,
you know,
yeah,
and,
yeah, I know.
It took me a long time. You know, that's such an inspiration, and, you know, it'd be great if, you know, people hear that and they can just, like, listen to what you're saying, and maybe some can and get it. However, most of us have to arrive at that level of surrender and love in our own way,
yeah,
in our own timing.
Yeah.
It's not an intellectual process, right? It's a true spiritual transformation that happens. But sharing that journey is an inspiration for people for the path that needs to be taken, that total surrender and to compassion and to love, and to understand how the power we have when we realize we are this strong, you know, divine energy of love and compassion. I mean, that's just so powerful.
Yeah.
Just your story,
yeah,
is so amazing. So amazing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, in the time we have left, can you just name, just to kind of rattle off some of the top natural remedies that you have found to be effective and that maybe you recommend in your book? And we're obviously encouraging people to pick up a copy of your book. And let me just tell people to go to liberatinglyme.com is the website. Is there another website you would like people to go to as well?
You can, if people like Instagram, you can find me at Liberating Lyme on Instagram, at Liberating Lyme. And then the book was released January 12th, and it's worldwide. You can find it on any bookstores. It's through Inner Traditions and distributed by Simon & Schuster. So any bookstore, just Google it and you'll find it.
Liberating Yourself from Lyme with Vera McCoy. So, yeah, just in the few minutes we have left, why don't we just kind of make a little list of some of the natural supplements you found to be helpful.
Yeah, yes. So the most important medicine is love, as we talked about. The second most important medicine is fire. So building fire in your immune system. So this can translate into what kinds of foods build fire, or what kinds of exercises build fire? Fire in the belly. I'm not talking about inflammation. I'm talking about getting that core zest back, that fire, the mana, the hara, the chi, whatever you want to call it. So we're looking for those exercises that help build that fire, getting your gut health back to 100%. So any kind of exercise is crucial, even if you're bedridden. Sit-ups, whatever you can do, especially exercises that make you sweat, super crucial. Infrared saunas, I highly recommend as well. For foods, what kinds of foods get our fire going? Fats. Fats became the most important food for me, particularly, and if you're a vegetarian, you might be squeamish, but particularly animal fats. And I kept getting the intuitive download to eat pork fat, as much lard as you possibly can. Now, you want to get it from, you know, antibiotic-free sources, like, you know, where the animal's been treated right. If you're a vegetarian, go coconut oil and avocados, avocado oil, anything high in fats, as much fat and oils as you can possibly eat. And what else lights a fire? The grasses, wheatgrass. Barley grass, any of those grasses, wheat grass juice, get them powdered, as much of that as you can. You think of your belly as like a compost pile, and with lots of bacteria and things. And to get that compost pile hot, you got to add things like grasses. You know, when you put grass on a compost pile, it can even catch on fire. So those are really key. Lots of greens, no sugars. You got to cut the sugars out. This is all in my book, and you can find summaries there. As far as the antibiotics go, I use the antibiotics when things are hitting the fan. When things are really hitting the fan, you can use them in acute situations. doxycycline is always good. There's other medicines out there that people are using, like disulfiram, which people have found to be helpful. On the herbal side of things, the most important medicines I found were resveratrol, extremely important for Lyme disease and COVID too. Resveratrol is found in Japanese knotweed and also in wine. It's like wine without the alcohol. Resveratrol, pretty important. Colloidal silver, I'm a big fan of. There's many other antimicrobial herbs. But for me also, most importantly, was I had a big breakthrough when I started to be able to get at the cysts or the eggs. And I found the homeopathics really important, specifically homeopathic graphites, like the pencils, like lead. Homeopathic graphites kills those little cysts that dissolves those little eggs. Mm. So there's other homeopathics like it. I found those very important. That's just a quick top 10.
Well, yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, that's so much right there in, you know, the advice out of your own experience. And, you know, if anyone is dealing with this, suspect they may have or someone else may have, that's where I certainly encourage people to pick up a copy of Veer's new book and go to liberatinglyme.com, pick up a copy of Liberating Yourself from Lyme. It's such an important book, Veer, and, you know, it's even more important because it's your personal journey and your own personal transformation. And when people speak of their own process, it just resonates much more powerfully for people because you're like a pioneer. You've been to the, you've entered hell. You've come back to tell us what we need to do. You know, it was a courageous process you went through, and you didn't know you were volunteering for it, but.
But
you were intrepid in your, as a warrior to heal and transform your health in the most profound way possible.
It's so
inspirational.
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm forever grateful, really. Even though I don't recommend it to anyone, but I can say I am grateful. I can finally say thank you, Lyme disease, for helping me to get back into my full power.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been such an inspirational conversation, Veer. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us and for putting all of your wisdom together in your latest book. Encourage people to pick up a copy, and I know there's always healing, there's always a solution. So you've been an inspiration today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope it helped.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a great conversation. I'm so glad everyone is listening, because this is what we do every week on What Women Must Know, inspirational conversations that will change your life and support you in your healing journey. So I've got to go. Time is up, but I just want to remind everyone to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.